simple prayer. And we're going to be talking, obviously, through that you could, I assume you can guess, we're going to be talking on the subject of prayer. I think sometimes we view prayer as a talent that needs to be applauded. In other words, so there are only a few people that can do that. It's a talent like playing the piano or public speaking, as you are gifted to do it and to have a great prayer life, and you're sort of destined for that genetically, or you aren't. But prayer is not that complicated. If you look at prayer in the Bible, prayer, you could almost compare a lot more to mowing the lawn than what you could to piano playing. It is, in essence, really that simple if we just follow the plan of the Scriptures. You don't have to be a pro to be able to have a great prayer life. You don't have to be the Apostle Paul or the Apostle Peter and that just everything is just working out so well for you that everything is just perfect. Now, if you look at the Bible, you can see that anyone can have a great prayer life. And that's what we're going to look at together over the next couple of weeks. Take a look with me in Luke chapter 11. We'll read there from verse 1. It says, one day Jesus was praying in a certain place. When he finished, one of his disciples said to him, Lord, teach us to pray just as John taught his disciples. Now, a little bit of history here that I assume many of us know is that his disciples were men who grew up or were raised with the Jewish customs. And traditionally, they were men that would have grown up learning to pray. So they have most probably prayed all their lives. And yet when they listen to Jesus' prayer, they notice that there's something different here. And they say, Jesus, we want to pray like you. We don't want to do it the traditional way. We don't want to do it the old school way. We want to do it your way. Your way seems like it's working. Our way seems complicated. So Father, please teach us, or Jesus, please teach us to pray. And then he says to them in verse 2, he says, when you pray, say, Father, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come. Give us each day our daily bread. Forgive us our sins. For we also forgive everyone who sins against us. And lead us not into temptation. We're not going to break down the whole prayer this morning. But if you look at the prayer, what it seems like Jesus is saying basically is, guys, keep it simple. This whole thing takes place in 4 verses. Not 4 pages or 4 chapters. Prayer can be very simple. And I think in many ways what we do sometimes while we struggle with our prayer life is we make it more complicated than what God has intended for it to be. We think that to be able to come before God, I need to be high, I need to be holy, I need to be incredibly eloquent. And when I reach that level of highness and holiness and eloquence, then God will hear my prayers and then I would feel like I have a vibrant prayer life. But God never intended that way. That's why Jesus says, in their response, when they question, teach us to pray, he says, when you pray, just simply say, Father. Now for us, that is nothing new. But for the men of the Old Testament, even the greatest men of the Old Testament, never addressed God as Father. They would call him Lord, they would call him God. They would, as many of us know, if they were to write his name, they would first take a bath before doing so, because it was just so holy. Even the great King David, who was a man after God's own heart, through writing so many wonderful psalms, never called God Father. The great priests and prophets of the Old Testament were certainly men and women of prayer, but they never called God Father. And Jesus saying to them, guys, when you want to pray, just simply go before him and just say, Father, Abba, Father. It means Dad. He says that when you pray, we need to be able to go before God and simply say, Dad, now I have 2 small kids. One is 6, one is 3. I can be busy with anything, as particularly preparing this message. They would just walk up to me and say, Dad, they don't care whether I'm busy. They know that when they say Dad and they twinkle their little eyes, that there's going to be a response. And he is saying that our prayer lives need to be able to be that simple. We need to be able to go before the throne of God. We need to be able to sit down before Him. We need to be able to look up to heaven and just say, Father, Dad, Daddy, whatever it is that you call your dad. We need to be able to, with such simplicity, enter His presence and say, Father, I'm in your presence. I want to be with you. Our prayers should have that same simplicity as what children have by calling you mom or by calling you dad. I think if we were to look at our prayer lives, let me ask this question. How many of us currently feel very satisfied with our prayer lives? Just a show of hands. How many of us currently feel very satisfied with our prayer lives? One. Two. Three. Okay. Three people. How many of us would like to take our prayer lives higher? Okay, take a look around you quickly. That's about 100% of us. So the question then is, why are only three holy, holy people? Now, if you've been around for some weeks or years at this congregation, you know you need to be careful when you put up your hand. But why is it that only three very holy people are able to have satisfied prayer lives? Is it because the rest of us don't want it? Or is it maybe because we simply don't have the know-how? My guess is that for most of us, it is actually that we don't have the know-how. And what we're going to do is we're basically going to close now. Those three men are going to stand here in front. No, I'm only pulling their leg. I'm very excited that they have vibrant prayer lives. What we're going to be taking a look at over the next 4 weeks is we're going to be taking a look at the know-how. We seem to have the desire because most of us put up a hand and say, listen, yes, I'm not satisfied, and yes, I want to have a greater prayer life. It's not, no, I'm not satisfied, and I don't care. It's not, I'm not satisfied, I want to have a greater prayer life, but what is the know-how? And what we're going to be doing, to give you an idea, is that you cannot, I'm going to be teaching you four steps that I pray will be able to help you to bring back simplicity to your prayer. But these four steps is going to be spread over 4 weeks. So this is going to be like one long message over 4 months, over 1 month, 4 weeks. So basically, if you look at your prayer life as maybe now a year, what we're going to be trying doing is this. And we're going to be taking a look at step one today, and then later on step two, step three, and as we go, step four. And what I want to encourage you to do over the next 4 weeks is, one, if it's your first time visiting today, or maybe if you've an old prayer warrior like some of these guys, then don't give up here by step one and say, well, gee, I've got that down, or I don't have that down, or when I get this down, I'll be fine. No, what we're going to take a look at is we're going to take a look at four steps. And really, what I want to encourage you to do is starting today is to be able to take these steps, and they're going to be very simple steps, but take these steps and say, I'm going to just implement step one. I'm not even going to care about step two, three, and four. Step two, we'll worry about next week. Step three, the week thereafter, and step four, the week thereafter. All we need to be focusing on today is just step one. What does it take to have a great prayer life that yet remains very simple? And step one, as simple as it can be, is you have to plan it. You have to plan it. If you want to be able to have a great prayer life, you have to plan it. Take a look with me in Psalm chapter 5. Think for a moment about something that you were maybe meant to do during this month, or meant to do maybe during this year. I'm sure that towards the end of last year, many of us had many great ambitions and desires, many different things that we hoped for. Things like, things that you were meant to do but never got around to. Things like servicing your car. You know, let me see, do we have anyone like that? That you know you need to be servicing your car, but it's gone past that mileage yet. You know you should have serviced it, but you didn't. Do we have anyone that have done that? Does everyone service their cars? Okay, we've got a couple of shy people at the back there, but most probably not. Over the winter time, how many of us had a roof that leaked and we think, got to fix it? Okay, that's me and a couple of people at the back there. But now it's summertime, so now it doesn't leak anymore, so when do we worry about this? Next winter. Things like returning a phone call. Got to really get around to it. Got to call them. For some of us, putting petrol in your car. Got to do it. Should have done it. For with the sisters, they'll maybe resonate more with this than the brothers. Sorting out your photos. You keep on taking them. And there are hundreds of photos lying around at home, but they're not in an album, and it makes absolutely no sense where they're going or what their purpose is. And if you open the cupboard, the photo albums that are empty fall out, plus the loose photos, plus the other photos stuck in it. We have these intentions, and we say, this is what I want to do, this is what I hope to do, but we don't get around to it. Why? I have found personally 9 out of 10 times it's simply because I don't plan it. For me, one of those things, except the leaking roof, is my taxes. I don't know how diligent you guys are with that matter. I mean, I eventually pay it, but the person that lives with that nightmare is Candace Roman, my tax consultant. She sends emails. Due date is coming. Due date is coming. Due date is still coming. Due date is coming. I look at the inbox and I think, oh, the due date is coming. When is the due date? Oh, it's 16th of October. 14 days, 12 days left for me. And I think, I've got to do it. I've got to do it. I should do it. Yes, I must do it. And I move on and I do nothing about it. Why? I simply don't plan. We never officially put it in our to-do list or in our calendar or place, wherever we put things that are most important to us, put it in there and say, this will be done. As I've learned over the years, if you fail to plan, you plan to fail. In general, the things in life that get done are the things that we schedule to do. The things that don't get done are the things that we don't schedule to do. And prayer is no different. If you want to have a vibrant prayer life, you have to schedule it. And that is the thing that we'll pick up in the scriptures. Take a look here. We'll see this pattern throughout. We're going to take a look at several scriptures here. Psalm chapter 5.
1. This is David, King David, that wrote this psalm. And he says, in the morning, O Lord, you hear my voice. In the morning, I lay my request before you, and I wait in expectation. What was David's schedule, his pattern? When did he pray? In the morning. Doesn't mean we need to be praying in the morning, but what you'll see is that for him, what worked for him, seemingly? The morning. He says, in the morning, you hear my voice. In the morning, I lay my request before you. This kind of thing happens for me in the morning. In Psalm 55, we catch up with him again. Some years later, verse 17, it will come up on the side screens. He says, evening, morning, and noon, I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. Evening, morning, and noon, I cry out in distress, and he hears my voice. Again, you see a pattern. It was Jewish custom to actually pray that way. Evening, morning, and noon. Again, an established practice. You guys remember the story of King Darius, when his administrators and advisors approached him and said, we've got a great cool idea for you. Why don't you issue a decree that over the next 30 days, that if anyone were to pray to anyone else but you, O dear, almighty king, that he should be killed. And then the king issued that decree and he said, listen, over the next 30 days, whenever someone prays, if they do not pray to me, they will be killed. And then we read in Daniel chapter 6, verse 10, which will come up on the side screens, it says in verse 10, now when Daniel learned that the decree had been published, he went home to his upstairs room where the windows opened towards Jerusalem. 3 times a day, he got down on his knees and prayed, giving thanks to God just as he had done before. You could almost say, just as he has scheduled before. Just as his custom, just as his practice was, 3 times a day, just as he had done before. Let's take a look at Jesus' prayer life. Mark chapter 1. We'll read there in verse 35. This you have to turn to. We've got to give you some work to do. We just want to make sure you stay sharp in the pages. Mark chapter 1, verse 35. And you've got to get there quickly because this is going to happen quickly. Verse 35. Very early in the morning, while it was still dark, Bible's very descriptive, Jesus got up, so he didn't do it in bed, left the house, and went off to a solitary place where he prayed. Number of things you can learn in that passage, eh? Time, very early. Place, for starters, not in bed. Never a good idea. Place, a solitary place where he prayed. Luke chapter 5 will come up on the side screens, verse 15. Yet the news about him spread all the more, so that crowds of people came near him to be healed of their sickness. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Time, often. Places, lonely. Luke chapter 6, verse 12, side screens. One of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray, and he spent the night praying to God. Time, all night. Place, mountainside. Luke chapter 22, verse 39. Jesus went out as usual, does it sound familiar? To the Mount of Olives, and his disciples followed him. He withdrew about a stone's throw beyond them, knelt down, and he prayed. Time, as usual, as was his custom, as he usually scheduled. Place, Mount of Olives. Jesus, as we look at his prayer life, he seems to be very intentional about making time and having a specific time when he prayed and having specific places where he would pray. And my guess is that if it worked for Jesus, and it worked for Daniel, and it worked for David, then quite possibly it could actually work great for you and I. My experience with prayer has been, and I'm sure that many of you can relate to this, is no plan usually equals weak prayers. No plan usually equals monotonous prayers. No plan equals irregular prayers. Dull prayers. Often, no plan equals no prayer. Where on the other side, a scheduled plan creates regular prayers. A scheduled plan usually creates focused prayers. And scheduled plan gives life-giving prayers. What does it boil down to? A time and a place. A time and a place can make all the difference. Let's first speak about time. If you were to inject 15 to maybe 30 minutes of life-giving prayer into your schedule, where would you do it? What would work for you? That's what we need to figure out. Would it be in the morning? Would it be in the afternoon? Would it be in the evening? Would it be mid-morning, mid-afternoon, mid-evening? What works best for you? See, what works best for you and what works best for me would be different, but something will work best for each of us. Maybe you're at a place where you just need to decide and say, you know what? I'm actually just going to get up. If I want to have simple, vibrant prayer, I'm actually just going to get up 15 minutes earlier, the same time every day, 15 minutes earlier than usual to have that prayer. Maybe that doesn't work for you. You need to do something that I've often done, and this has more been, my prayer has always been in the morning, but what I've often done is during the day is I'll step out of my office. There's a semi-park close by, and just for 10, 15 minutes, usually when I'm working on something or I'm in meetings and phone calls and this is happening, that's happening, just step out and just go for a 10, 15 minute walk just to realign myself with God. Maybe that will work for you. Just all I do is my lunchtime, I'm actually going to step out of the office, go to a garden close by or a park close by, and just pray. It could be something as simple as adjusting your schedule to just get home a half an hour earlier or go home half an hour earlier, but don't go directly home. But a place where you know, wherever that might be for you, we'll get to the where just now, where you know that there is, I can have 15 minutes of prayer. Something that I started doing in the beginning of this year that I've never done before, I've heard people do this, and I never really thought it could work, is actually going for a prayer run. Now, I thought, man, it's a battle just to stay alive in the run. How could I still possibly pray? But then I started trying it earlier this year where sometimes once or twice a week, I would actually go for a run. And while I go for the run, and I'll go for a half an hour run or hour run, what have you, and I'll just have a time of prayer. And what has happened for me in that time is I've actually gained the greatest clarity, because it's usually for me early in the morning. I go for a run. I pray while I run, and it's like everything else disappears. And what you're able to do is in that time is just focus on God. But it has to be scheduled. When I don't schedule it, it simply just doesn't work. What time will be best for you? For me currently, at 6 a.m. That's when I pray every morning. For you, it might be 5 a.m., 7 a.m., 1 p.m., 9 p.m. The time really doesn't matter. What matters is that it works best for you. And what matters is that you schedule it. By schedule, I mean that you put it in your diary or you put it on a place where you know when I put it there, these are the things that happen for me. For some of us, that's on the fridge. Some of us write it with a cokie on your hand, which might be quite a thing to do that every day, but if that's what it takes, and say, get up, 5 a.m. or 1 p.m. or whatever, but wherever it is, if there's one thing that you do today, I want to ask you, let it be this. Make a decision and say, if I look back at my life, if I look back at my walk with God, what has been the time that works best for me? That changes as the seasons of your life change. It is a lot easier when you're a campus student. It is fairly easy when you're single. When you have young children, it brings an interesting dynamic to that thing. There comes times where you might feel like you want to pull out your hair. But that passes too. But figure out whatever season, if there's one thing that you do today is this. Whatever season you're in, what works best for you in this season of your life, mark it, schedule it, and make a decision and say, that's going to happen for me. For some, maybe today, you don't have a prayer life. To a degree, that is easy, because you can experiment. But try and say for the next month, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get up 15 minutes earlier. I'm just going to schedule it. I'm going to make it happen because I want to experience the joy of simple prayer. What else do we need? We need the where. Where will you pray? Some of you might think, that's really simple. That's why it's called simple prayer. Where is your lonely place? Your solitary place? Where would your mountainside be, your Mount of Olives, your Garden of Gethsemane? Where is the environment for you that you know if I go into this environment, it will be completely distraction-free? It will be a place where I can just be with God. There would be no phone calls. There would be no temptation of checking your emails, checking SMSs that come in. There would be maybe that would part of be time, but early enough so that the kids don't bother you. But where is that place of totally solitary confinement? It can be in your study. I know of people who do it in their lounge. I know of several people who have attempted to do it in their beds. That is usually very solitary, very lonely, very deep. But not deep with God. Deep in another land. It could be a park. I know some people that drive through earlier in the morning to beat traffic to work and then in the office park sit in the car and they have their solitary time with God because there's no one else there. It is quiet. And they don't even attempt to go into the office because they know as soon as they walk in that door, there are things screaming at them. Look at me. Use me. Start getting involved with me. But where is a place that is completely solitary, confined? Again, different places for different people. This plays an intricate role in our prayer lives. For me as a young Christian, about 17 odd years ago, I lived with my dad. I was a campus student. And we had close to our home, the Hunt and Polo Club. I think it's called the Cape Hunt and Polo Club. It's a race course. And every morning, I can't remember the time, but it was a set time. Every morning I would go and I would walk around that the racetrack, and that would be my solitary place. I would never be disturbed, and I would be able to pray there. I loved it. Then from there, I moved just up the road here to a place called Gillian Court. It's a block of flats. For me, the place that worked best there, because what I do is even partially in picking a home or a place to stay, I look at where would the place for me be. Myself, like I think most probably most men, but not women, I can't pray indoors. It's just, I can't. I know many can, I can't. I sit there, I really try. I do. I've tried this so many times. And I sit there and I fade away, I slump over, I think of other things. I've tried journaling, which helps a little bit. But I need to be outdoors. So when I moved to Gillian Court, it was right next to Tigerberg High School. And Tigerberg, their rugby field, became my prayer spot. From there, I moved, still in Paro, to Robertson Street. There was an old soccer field a block away from my house. And every morning, same time, I would go to that soccer field and I would pray right there. Then Lisa and I got married and we moved to Stellenberg. Now, that was a tricky one. I battled to find a place there. So there what I would do is just early in the mornings, so I would go for a walk in the neighborhood. Before the traffic comes, what have you, is just go for a walk in the neighborhood and pray. There were many things that didn't work there. So from there, 6 months later, we moved. Then we moved to Monte Vista. And in Monte Vista, again, I found nice public parks. And every morning, same time, I would go to that public park and I would pray right there in the public park. From there, we moved to Mowbray. And Mowbray, I found an old soccer field just across our home. Every morning, I would go to that soccer field, even though it was next to the N2, which was a little bit tricky. But every morning, the soccer field would be my place where I knew I could adapt to the cars, but it was solitary. I wouldn't be bothered. It would be a place where I could just connect with God. From there, we moved to the Tyger. And the Tyger, I found a rugby field of a school next door to us. And there, every morning, I would just be in the rugby field. Same time, same place. I remember Jock Hennis, when I reached out to him, we even went together praying in that solitary place. From there, we moved to Paro North. In Paro North, again, what did I find? A public park. And I prayed there every morning. From there, we moved to Boston, where, thank God, we still are. And I found a spot, a park down the road. I walk there. It takes me about 15 minutes. I pray while I walk there. I pray. I spend some time in the park praying, and I come back 6 o'clock in the morning, every morning. It's a place that I know is solitary. It is my mountainside, my lonely place, my mountain of Gethsemane, and it transforms me because it is lonely. It is solitary. It is free from distraction. It is time with God. You have to get a time and a place that works. On a personal level, I am incredibly dependent on that. Whenever that time or that place moves, so does my relationship with God. And it's not very moving. I'm talking about that kind of move. Recently, this has been a tough month for me, the last 30 days of my walk with God, because we have had to, for several situations, do a lot of traveling, and I had to be in the United States, and there I was in several states in a few days. And it was hard, because the time was different every day. I tried to adjust to the clocks. The place was horrible. I stayed in sort of guest houses and what have you, and there was no park, and I tried to figure it, and then the next time in another city, and the next time in another city, I battled. Then we came back, went to go and visit the Durban church, and there was the same thing where I battled. The time was more or less okay, and then I tried, the couple that we stayed with had sort of a big backyard, but I can't walk in circles like that. I mean, the yard is big, but it's not like a rugby field. And I pray and I said, God, please, I want to connect, but then I'm walking this way again, and I'm walking this way again, and it was a battle. I wanted to pray down the road, but it's in Westville, Durban, where everything is like this. I mean, it is inclines of note. So the next I said, this is going to work. So it rains. It pours. And it's early in the morning. We're staying in this little cottage outside of their house with these big sliding doors, and you just see the rain pouring down. Everyone in the house is asleep. Our two children are not asleep. They are very awake, and I realize if I don't get time with God right now, the day is full of appointments. It's not going to happen. So now I sit there, and I sit with a journal, and the kids are going ballistic. I mean, they are over each other, and they're fighting, and then they're playing, and my wife is doing some packing and this and that, and I'm writing in my journal. I'm trying to pray. I'll tell you what I wrote. Let me just find it here. Father, I'm actually going to try and pray in the middle of all of this craziness. Please hear my prayer. And fascinatingly enough, I was actually able to zone out most of that activity that was taking place. But I've known and learned through the years that I can only last so long. Then I came back and I've been to Johannesburg. I had to be there for a meeting 2 days ago and came back, I don't know, Friday night 9:30. And then there was the wedding out of town yesterday. And it was just, you know what, it's not been fun for me. Love the times with the brothers and sisters. Hated the time with God because it just wasn't, I didn't have my time and place. This morning, I was up. Thank God I'm home. I had my time. I had my place. I came back home and I felt like a new man. We need time. We need a place. And we need to, this is very important, schedule it. And then we need to stick to it. Let me in closing define what I mean by stick to it. Now, this would most probably be more appropriate to the woman, but to the men, I mean. But the woman can go and think what this would mean for you. You could take up this challenge as well. And for some of the men, as the challenge unfolds, it might mean nothing to you, which you'll realize later why. But often when I sit with people and they say, I really want to enhance my relationship with God, and we talk about this kind of thing about a time and a place, and I say, are you willing to put in the time? Are you willing to get the place? And they say, yes, but you could sense that there's an uncertainty in their voice or uncertainty in their demeanor. I ask them this question. So I say, so you're going to do it, hey? This is, you found your time and your place. Yes, it's 6 a.m. I'm going to be praying in my room, whatever. So you're sure about that? Yes. And I ask this question. Are you head shaven sure? So what does that mean? You're so sure that if you miss that, you'll shave your head. Now that puts a whole different dynamic into the ball game here. And then people are, whoosh. So you're serious? Yes, I'm serious. Serious is, yes, I'm head shaven, sure. If you want to have a simple prayer life, and you want to have a prayer life that's vibrant, and most of us in this room this morning said, yes, I want to have it. I want to enhance my prayer life. I want to take it to the next level. I want to hit step one and step two and step three and step four. Then I want to ask you to do this today. If there's one thing that you do today, this could be the most important moment for you. Sit down, decide on a time that works best for you. Doesn't mean because it works for me, it will work for you. My time is not your time. Your time is not my time. What works best for you? 6 o'clock in the morning, 7 o'clock, 1 p.m. This is my time every day. Decide on your place, my study, the park, wherever it works for you. Write it down. And then write underneath it. Head shaven sure. If you want to experience the joy of simple prayer, time, place, head shaven sure. God bless. Amen.